Now, friends, we come today to the 20th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy. And we're entering here a very interesting section that we'll be in for some time. Here we're going to look at first today the laws regulating warfare. Actually, it's concerning the draft. Nothing's quite as pertinent as that. And then there's laws regulating murder, marriage, and delinquent sons, and brother relationships, dress, the building code, the planting of seed, and marriage, and divorce, and the world, the flesh, and the devil. Now, friends, can you have anything more pertinent than that for us today? Now, don't tell me that the book of Deuteronomy is a book that's way out, that it doesn't touch life where we live it today. This is the law given to Israel. But there are certain basic principles here that if they're incorporated in our living, in our life, it would contribute to the happiness and the weal and the welfare of mankind. This is something very important. I'm convinced that the men who originally drew up our Constitution were men who were Bible-oriented. Problem today is that we have a society made up of people that are entirely ignorant of the Bible, and our lawmakers today actually appear to be stupid in many cases today. And as far as the Word of God is concerned, they are. And the blunders that are taking place today in politics, my friend, are enough to cause us to weep and howl, because these men, far from God and not knowing Him at all. Now, we're going to be, in the next few days, in this area, dealing with these things that they're trying to deal with in Washington their own way, and they've been wrestling with them for years. Now, let me get to our study. Chapter 20, verse 1. When thou goest out to battle against thine enemies, and seest horses and chariots, and a people more than thou, be not afraid of them, for the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Now this is something that's very important for the children of Israel. I'm not sure that it's important for us today. Now they say today, make love, not war. That sounds good as a little cliche and a little motto, but it's like a great many. It's absolutely meaningless. There are times to make war because we're living in a sinful world. The heart of man is desperately wicked. And there are times when you need to protect yourself. And there are wars in which God is on one side. Napoleon put it like this. He said, God is on the side that has the largest battalions. But Napoleon found out that was a lie, because he won quite a few battles in which actually he didn't have the biggest battalions at all. Very frankly, the important thing for any nation, certainly so-called civilized and Christian nation, is this war that God is in. And if He's not in it, we ought not to be in it either. I'm afraid that we have folk that do not think in terms like that. Now, verse 2, it shall be when ye are come nigh unto the battle that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people, shall say unto them, Hear, O Israel, ye approach this day unto battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint. Fear not, do not tremble, neither be ye terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is He that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. Now that is something that is very important in warfare. Make sure that God is on your side, or better still, that you're on God's side. Now, God puts down four conditions, or four excuses that a man would have for not going to battle. Then we're going to see what it was that he had in mind. Verse 5, And the officers shall speak unto the people, saying, What man is there that hath built a new house, hath not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man dedicate it. Now, a man has a new home, and he's just built it, and he hasn't had an opportunity to live in it. Well, that man's not to go into battle. Why? Because his heart naturally would be in that new home. He had set his heart upon it, and his affection upon it. He wanted to live in it. Therefore, he's to have that opportunity. The second reason for a man not going to battle, and what man is he that hath planted a vineyard and hath not yet eaten of it? Let him also go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man eat of it. Now here's the man that has planted a vineyard. These people were an agrarian people. They were farmers. Most of Israel was. And this man has just got started. This is his business. He's planted a new vineyard. He hasn't had an opportunity to eat a grape off of it. Well, his heart is in that. His interest is that. He's to stay until he gets this started, until he eats of it. And another man eat of it if he's killed in battle. So let him stay till he gets it established. That's quite interesting, is it not? Then verse 7, you have the third reason. And what man is there that hath betrothed a wife and hath not taken her? Let him go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man take her. Here's a young man engaged to a girl, and he's drafted. Well, he's not to be taken. Why? Because he's in love with that girl, wants to marry her. Let him stay home. Let him marry the girl. That's the important thing. That's where his heart is. And he's not to go to battle. Verse 8, and the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, what man is there that's fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. Now, there might be a man that just very frankly says, I'm a coward. I don't want to go fight. I'm afraid to. I don't want to go fight. And therefore, I want to stay home. I've always said that these are four good reasons for a man not going to war. Now, I don't think the first three reasons would have gotten me, but that last one would have. If you're afraid and faint-hearted, you're fearful, you're not to go. Now, I would have turned and gone home. And you remember how this worked. That was in Gideon's day. This law was applied to Gideon. Gideon started out with quite a few there, you recall. He had several thousand. He ended up with 300. Why? Well, because there were those there that when they came down to the water, they got down on all fours, took a drink. This other crowd, they went through and lapped it up like a dog. They said, let's get to the enemy, get this job done. We want to protect and save our nation. And so they're the ones that went to battle. These others did not. Now, I do not know about you, but I personally have not quite agreed with all this business of burning of draft cards. I've had great sympathy with many of these young men, but I wished instead of trying to blame it on the government and trying to blame it on something else, why don't they just come out and say they're yellow and they don't want to go fight? And I will agree that that's a good reason. That would have kept me out of the battle, I can assure you that. I wouldn't have gone. I couldn't have gone because I'd have to say my knees wouldn't hold me up. I wasn't permitted to play much football when I was in college and in high school for the very simple reason I had to work my way through school. And I'd never been able to prove whether I was a good enough player to be given a scholarship. And I'd actually have had to have more than a scholarship as I supported my mother. So I had to give it up, but I played a little, and I enjoyed it. But there's one thing about it. Right before that kickoff, when that whistle is blown, honestly, and I played the backfield, standing way back, my knees buckled. There were times when I would actually go down on one knee. I was so scared. But the minute I was hit, if I got that ball and I was hit, I want to tell you, from then on, I'm all right. You see, there was this excuse. but I wanted to play. Now, what is back of all of this? God says, I want my people to know two things when they go to war. One is, on the right side, that they're fighting for that which is right, and God is with them. The second thing that is very important is that they be enthusiastic about it. And I would say today that the draft was a good thing, provided it was put on this basis. I don't think it's a good thing unless it is put on this kind of a basis today. And I think if a fellow's yellow, he ought to say so. He said, I'll be honest with you, I'm yellow. I have no heart for this thing at all. And I think that would be an excuse, by the way. And if you get rid of this motley mob that we've had today, that this is a war we're fighting for our country, and that the flag and that patriotism are really something. It's worthwhile, but not the way it's been carried on today by politicians, you see. So God was very wise, after all. He had a marvelous arrangement here for his people, even in time of war. Now will you notice verse 11? And it shall be, if it make the answer of peace, and open unto thee, then it shall be that all the people that's found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, they shall serve thee. Now this all has to do with warfare, you see. And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. Now this is another great principle. And you will recall that General Douglas MacArthur did not believe in fighting a war that you don't try to win. That's the curse of our nation, is its compromise and our phony piousity today. It's shot through our churches, it's in our government that we are a great, big, wonderful brother. Now, don't misunderstand me. I love my country, I love my nation, but I hate to see this type of thing. He said, don't fight a land war in Asia. He said in his day that if you're going to fight a war, you're to fight it to win. That's the purpose of it. And that's exactly what God says. You got no business to fight a war unless you're fighting it to win. May I say that God put down some very good principles here, friends, and I think that we've departed very far from them.